Good afternoon. My name is Alan Brown. I'm a senior banana breeder with the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture.
Here we go. Usually I'm loud enough to be able to heard without the microphone, so we'll go from here. IITA is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, so happy birthday to us. My home base is in Arusha, Tanzania, but I have responsibilities in Uganda and Nigeria as well. Let me talk a little bit about the type of bananas that we are breeding in Africa. There are essentially three types of cooking bananas that we're focusing on that are distinct from the dessert Cavendish bananas that you're probably most familiar with in the U.S. In Nigeria, this is plantains. In Uganda, this is Matoki, or East African Highland bananas. And the one I'm going to focus on today are the Machadi bananas from Tanzania, which are unique amongst cultivated bananas in that they are indeed a diploid banana. They are seedless because they are parthenocarpic. Now, conventional wisdom in banana breeding is that cultivated bananas should be triploid. And this is based upon two criteria here. First of all, that no one wants seeds in their bananas, so generating triploids will eliminate the seed production. But there's also this conventional wisdom that the triploids have the appropriate combination of large bunches and vigorous plant growth. However, it takes much longer to develop a triploid, and the triploid growth pattern is so different from the diploid that you actually need more space to grow a triploid than you do a diploid. Triploids tend to branch out, and they have a more wide opening growth pattern, while the diploids tend to be more straight up and down and vertical. So a farmer can grow a triploid in a 3 by 3 meter space, but he can grow a diploid in a 2 by 2. So there might actually be some benefit to it. As I mentioned, the Machadis are kind of the exception to this rule. The Machadis tend to be very vigorous plants. This is from our pollination blocks in Arusha, Tanzania. Again, the spacing here tends to be 2 by 2 as opposed to the conventional 3 by 3 that triploids are normally grown on. And before we actually look at the bunches of the Machadi here, let me kind of walk through how the triploid bananas are generally produced. You will start out by making a cross between a primary triploid and a diploid that may be a source of disease resistance in the hope of generating a tetraploid. Now, with this tetraploid, you're not just getting tetraploids when you make these crosses. Sometimes you're getting diploids, sometimes you're getting triploids, sometimes you're getting hexaploids. So the trick is to generate a tetraploid that has the characteristics, that you want. And then in order to regenerate the triploid, you'll cross it again to an improved diploid and essentially come up with a secondary triploid. Now, this entire process can take 10 to 17 years, so it's a long, long, you have to be patient to be a banana breeder. The Machadi bananas, as I mentioned, are an exception in that they produce exceptionally large bunches for diploids. These are, I believe there are 7 different Machadi cultivars here. These are essentially land races. There has been no improvement to date on Machadi. We're the first program to kind of focus on improving them. As you see, there's quite a bit of variability amongst these bunches. Although genetically, when you look at them at microsatellites, they tend to be very similar. There is a lot of phenotypic variation here. Some of that phenotypic variation may be epigenetic in nature. Some of it may be due to somatic mutagenesis. When these go through tissue culture, we have potentially chromosomal relocations and abnormalities, translocations, inversions, and deletions. Again, as I say, bananas are a wonderfully interesting crop to work with. There we go. No worries. Machadi are susceptible to just about everything. So they are susceptible to black sigatoka, to Fusarium race 1. We are facing the prospect of race 4 within the next couple of years. It is in Mozambique and it is in Jordan on both sides of us. So it's not a question of if we're going to get race 4. It's more of a question of when we're going to get race 4. We have nematode issues, we have weevil issues, we have viruses, including bunchy top, abiotic stress that we're working on, post-harvest pressures. So I've got enough work to keep me busy here for quite a long time. We fortunately do have sources of resistance to most of these diseases, with the exception of bunchy top. And we are generating hybrids at the moment. Now, just kind of to focus on what Machadi is, because in the literature there are multiple names that are utilized for these. I'm referring to them as East African diploid bananas. So in Tanzania, they're referred to as Machadi. Some people have called them Mashali. I won't use that name. I'll use the Tanzania name instead. In Kenya, they're known as Mararu. In the Comoros and in Madagascar, they're referred to as Malali. Our genetic analysis with microsatellites suggests that they all belong to the same clone set, that these are our variants on the original ancestor, diploid ancestor that came to Africa probably 2 centuries ago. We have been genotyping the worldwide MUSA genetic diversity in collaboration with our partners in Bioversity and with the Experimental Institute of Botany in the Czech Republic. And the interesting thing about the Machadi is that it bunches in very close to three of the most important dessert bananas in the world, Gros Michel, Cavendish, and Pomme. They're all in that same cluster down there. In fact, Machadi appears to be the unreduced gamete source for Cavendish and Gros Michel. So two-thirds of the genome of Cavendish and Gros Michel came from probably a member of this Machadi group or East African diploid group. So these bananas have importance to the Tanzanians as a cooking banana. They can supply up to 30% of the caloric intake for the people in my part of the country. But beyond East Africa, they have implications in worldwide banana breeding as well. If we can integrate this disease resistance from say, Calcutta 4 into Hootie White, not only will these diploids, we'll be able to release them locally as a cultivar, but they may be important in the improvement of other types of bananas, because you do not want a lot of the unpleasant characteristics that are associated with Calcutta 4. Small bunches, they produce seeds, the rowing is terrible. So hopefully we can not only benefit our immediate target audience, but internationally as well. The work that's going on at the moment is determining the genetic and morphological variation amongst these African bananas, identifying fertile parents that can be most effectively used in the breeding program, developing the hybrids with multiple sources of resistance. I don't suspect the hybrids are going to have the quality characteristics that people demand. So we are going to be attempting back crosses with these hybrids to the Machadi again to try to recover as much of the quality characteristics as we can. We can intercross resistance Machadi to pyramid resistance, and then even potentially produce chromosome doubled plants or tetraploids that again can be utilized in other breeding programs outside of Tanzania for the production of improved triploids. The work that I'll talk about here today is assessing the concentration and the viability of the pollen amongst the wild diploids that we're using in the breeding programs as sources of resistance and amongst the Machadi. Again, I'm talking about possibly doing back crosses here, so it's going to be important that the hybrids that we generate have at least the level of pollen production and viability that the best parents do. Identifying the most fertile Merrill Machadi and utilizing them in the program. So what we'll talk about here is 7 wild diploids that are commonly used in banana improvement. These are sources of resistance to Fusarium, to Sigatoka. Some of them are drought tolerant. Some of them, like Pisang Lalin, has been utilized for 50 years in various breeding programs for improved horticultural characteristics. Zebrina is a nematode-resistant line, showing some success in that area. And then you're going to see another list of the Machadi cultivars that are grown in Tanzania to assess which of these would be the best female parents in our female and male producing parents in our program. The student that's working on this is looking at three anthers. The pollen is taken at the same time of day, which is 8 a.m. in the morning. She is doing digital counts using the ImageJ software. We've done correlations between this and in vitro germination, and the correlation is actually very good, so we're happy with the results that we're seeing. Pollen counts are taken once a month. Staining, utilizing the TTC stain, assessing pollen viability. Drop of the TTC stain is added to the slide, which contains all of the pollen from a single anther. After room incubation, you can determine the viable pollen, which will take up the stain. The unviable pollen will not. And the percentage pollen is then calculated. So we're looking at two things. We're looking at how much pollen is this particular banana producing, and then in turn, what percentage of the pollen that's being generated is actually viable. Looking at total pollen production, the Machadi tend to be about 20% of the wild-type bananas. But there are significant differences amongst the Machadi and how much pollen is being produced. Iju Nkundu is essentially a male sterile plant. Machadi Laini, Hudi White, tend to be producing significantly larger amounts of pollen. When you look at percent viable pollen, again, you see some considerable differences here. Hudi White, which you just mentioned previously, the pollen that's being produced, 60% of that is viable. When you utilize those two categories to come up with the last category, which is total viable pollen, you can see that the Machadi is actually comparable to, say, Pisang Lalin and Zebrina in the amount of total pollen that's being produced. So this bodes well for us in that we'll be able to at least have as much success with Hudi White as a male than we would with Zebrina. Now, Zebrina is a difficult one to work with, and you don't get as much seed with the Zebrina as you do with some of the others, but at least it's not a dead end there for us, so that's actually a good thing to see. We looked at pollen collection at different times of the day to determine what's the best time for us to do the pollinations. So it seems to, the bracts will open up in the evening in bananas. So in the middle of the night, the bract will open up, the anthers will emerge, the pollen will be most viable at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and then by 10 o'clock, it's a considerable reduction. So the best time for us to do our pollinations is between 6 and 10 in the morning. After that, you're having diminishing returns on your pollinations. We are seeing a bit of a seasonal effect. It does appear to be best around April and June. May's a little bit off here, but we had a delayed rainy season this year, and I suspect that may have had an impact on it. May is generally the height of our rainy season. This year it was a little bit off. The warmest months of the year for us are December and January, and the coolest months of the year tend to be June and July. So this could be an impact of stress in that the plants are being stressed and not producing enough pollen. It could be a function of relative humidity, which differs throughout the year. It could even theoretically be associated with day length. Okay, I'm going to rush here because I'm running out of time. I'm out of time, okay. Well, let me just jump right quick to the acknowledgments then. I want to acknowledge my crew in Tanzania, great bunch of people. Veronica Masawi is on the far left. She's the first author on the publication. I want to acknowledge Hassan. I want to acknowledge all of our partners internationally. As you see, there's only one American partner here. I would love to see more Americans involved in banana research, considering what an important commodity it is to you guys. So if you're interested in banana research, please talk to me. And Dr. Ronnie Swennen, who has been the face of banana breeding in Africa for the past 40 years, my mentor, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that's provided the funding for us. So thank you very much, and sorry.